Welcome to Simply Scottish, a podcast of all things Scottish, with music, features, interviews, and more, on the web at www.simplyscottish.com.
To Simply Scottish, the half-hour show of Scottish music and features. I'm Andrew McDermott, your host. On this episode, we're showcasing key moments in Scotland's history by sharing shortlisted entries from our Moment in Scottish History contest. I enjoy hearing from listeners, and I welcome you to join me in our online community. Access Scottish news, trivia, episode updates, photos of Scotland, and more. Visit us at facebook.com/simplyscottish or at twitter.com/simplyscottish. Starting off with music, here's the Paul McKenna Band with a song from their 2013 album Elements. This is Ruins by the Shore.
Sometime between ice ages they first appeared, fell hungry on the beast and fish they speared. But all the bones are blackened and their faces are no more as we walk among the ruins by the shore. They worshipped gods and thought they'd never die. But now the spiders nest the tombs wherein they lie. But all their bones are blackened and their faces are no more as we walk among the ruins by the shore. They dreamed of golden cities raised into the air, but greater drew their simple hearts into its snare. But all their bones are blackened and their faces are no more as we walk among the ruins by the shore. Kings, tyrants and their empires on the earth held sway. Their belief in science took their souls away. But all their bones are blackened and their faces are no more as we walk among the ruins by the shore. And the silent skies, hoping that light will fall on blinded eyes. But all our bones will blacken and our faces be no more as we lay among the ruins by the shore. As we lay among the ruins by the shore.
You're listening to Simply Scottish. In 2013, Simply Scottish held a contest called A Moment in Scottish History in association with BBC Home Entertainment. To enter, participants needed to choose a single moment in Scotland's history and communicate it creatively, clearly and accurately in 60 words or less. A number of entries were submitted, spanning over 1,500 years. A grand prize winner and a short list of 15 finalists were chosen to be featured on the show. Put together, these 16 entries capture some of the most important moments in Scotland's long and colourful history. On this episode, we'll look at the first 8, from the Roman occupation of Britain to the cusp of union with England. It was the moment when the greatest empire the world had known up to that time realized that Scotland was not for the taking. A Roman legion disappeared, never to be seen again, and their resting place unknown to us still over 2,000 years later. Alan Jack, in Ayr, Scotland, submitted this entry, taking us all the way back to the 1st century AD. After invading Britain around the year 71, the Romans won a decisive battle against the tribes of Caledonia at Mons Graupus in AD 84. But the people of the north continued to fight back, pushing the Romans south. Around the year 117, the Roman 9th Legion marched north to subdue the Caledonian natives. They never came back. Mystery continues to surround the fate of these soldiers. Some say the legion disbanded, joined other units, or were deployed to an eastern part of the Roman Empire. Others hold that the elite group was destroyed by the Caledonians, and that Rome itself suppressed the loss to prevent embarrassment. We may never know. What is certain, though, is that Scotland and her early peoples were never fully conquered by the Romans, a testament to their courage and strength. For more about this topic, you'll find a number of books on the subject. There's also a 2011 documentary called Rome's Lost Legion that focuses on some new evidence, as well as a Hollywood film dramatizing the story called The Eagle. Moving forward a few centuries, here's a moment submitted by Diana Flynn in Glasgow. Breathless, Fergus neared the top of Dunad, the wind flattening the grass before him, his followers panting behind. Staunch, together he knew their rule would change this land of warring tribes. The keen wind witnessed to the shouts of affirmation as he placed his foot in the cold footprint in the rock. King, Dalriada was his. Dalriada was a kingdom on the western coast of early Scotland, thought to be a Gaelic-Irish colony. Fergus More was the first king of Dalriada. He and his people arrived in Argyll around 497 AD from Ireland, establishing a kingdom of Scots. Dunad was the hill where Dalriada's kings were declared, by placing a foot in the carved footprint on the rock. The former kingdom of Dalriada also contains the most concentrated number of archaeological findings in Scotland. If you're interested in visiting this beautiful and historically valuable area of Scotland, visit the Dalriada Project at www.dalriadaproject.org. The Picts were a medieval Celtic people who lived in ancient eastern and northern Scotland. Recent discoveries reveal that the Picts were a sophisticated people who made beautiful art and demonstrated the use of complex architectural principles. A key event in the history of the Picts is described in an entry by Graham Cruickshank in Edinburgh. The Picts, subdued by years of oppression by their arch-enemies, the Northumbrians, longed for an inspirational leader whose determination of purpose, clarity of vision, tactical awareness, and sheer raw courage could lift the yoke of slavery from their shoulders. Came the man, Bruid. Came the moment, at Dunnechten in 685, when pride and freedom were restored. Pretending to retreat, the Picts drew the Northumbrians into an ambush. The Picts defeated the Angles and permanently secured their independence from Northumbria. Later, Pictland would merge with the Scots of Dalriada to form the Kingdom of Alba, or Scotland, in the 10th century. Coming up, more moments in Scottish history, including the birth of Scotland's national flag. Here's music now from Fine Friday. From the album Gone Dancing, this is Hummingbird.
hummingbird, hummingbird, I knew I'd find you here. The bright lights drawing near, they always will. All that work and worry just to stay still. Hummingbird, hummingbird, it's always on your mind. The sweetness you must find, it doesn't get you down. You never reach the sky, you cannot touch the ground. Soar, you will never soar, spin or swoop or glide. Soar above all the soul, for in the shadows you must hide. Hummingbird, hummingbird, so you spread your wings. If you forget to sing, you know you'll lose your soul. Then where will you go when all the pretty things have gone?
The grand prize winner in our Moment in Scottish History contest is written by Thor Ewing, a writer and cultural historian based in Craven Arms, England. As Ewing says, "I have always had a passion for history, especially medieval and ancient history, and the cultures which it reveals." Ewing describes another moment in ancient Scotland, also involving the Picts. "The blue sky smiles down on the field, where the fallen cry out with their wounds. Not Angus, but Andrew has led us this day. It is he who brought us victory. Our enemy fled before us to Berwick and beyond. Blessed be Andrew the martyr. White clouds unfurl his cross, outspread through the heavens above Athelstaneford." Around 832 AD, an army of Picts and Scots, led by their king, Angus II, met a large army of Angles and Saxons, led by Athelstan. Surrounded, Angus prayed to St. Andrew for favour in the battle. Just before the fight, a saltire appeared in the sky, formed by white clouds against a blue background, representing the shape of the cross on which Andrew had been crucified. The sign gave Angus and his men added strength and purpose, and they won the day. When the Scots and Picts united to form Scotland, St. Andrew was chosen as their patron saint, and the Saltire Cross became the basis for the Scottish flag. You can visit the National Flag Heritage Centre in Athelstaneford and enjoy a video reenactment of the famous battle, and exhibits that bring to life the birthplace of Scotland's national flag, one of the oldest national flags in the world. Moving forward in history, our next finalist entry is by John Harbour of Helensburgh, Scotland. Comyn the Red staggered back in agony as Robert the Bruce removed the dagger from his body. The blow had been unexpected, and though they had argued, Comyn had assumed his safety was assured in the sanctity of the kirk. Clearly he was wrong. On the 10th of February 1306, Robert the Bruce and John Comyn, Lord of Badenoch, both contenders to the Scottish crown, met at Greyfriars Kirk in Dumfries to discuss the rightful heir to the Scottish throne. There was no love lost between them. Bruce had called the meeting and they left their swords outside the church. A fight broke out before the high altar, and Bruce stabbed Red Comyn, wounding him. When Bruce stepped from the church and told his men what had happened, his associate, Roger de Kirkpatrick, said, "You doubt, I make sure." Kirkpatrick walked into the kirk and struck more blows, killing Comyn. Less than 7 weeks later, Bruce was crowned King of Scotland and would go on to achieve lasting fame by helping to deliver Scotland's freedom from England. That key moment for Robert the Bruce came on the 24th of June 1314. He had gathered an army of around 9,000 men that included knights, nobles, freemen, tenants, town dwellers, and traders alike. They faced an English feudal army at least twice and perhaps as much as three times the size of Bruce's. On the first day of battle, as the armies were closing in on one another, Bruce noticed someone charging towards him on horseback. This entry, submitted by James Slug of Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, explains what happens next. As the English knight Sir Henry de Bohun turned to charge, he was met with the full fury of the Scottish spirit and the edge of Robert the King's battle axe. The King's return to his lines was met with great concern from his troops, as he lamented the loss of his favourite axe. This encounter seems to symbolise the battle, and indeed the War of Independence. One side was larger and more heavily armed, but the other more agile and mobile. After fierce fighting that lasted 2 days, Edward saw that defeat was turning into a rout and retreated. The victory at Bannockburn strengthened Bruce's position as king and helped to secure Scotland's independence once and for all. If you'd like to read more about Robert the Bruce, I heartily recommend The Bruce Trilogy by Nigel Tranter, a riveting historical fiction account of the life and legacy of one of Scotland's greatest leaders. Back to music now. Setting the scene for our next moment, here's The Corries with Glencoe.
Cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave O'Donnell, and cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house on They came in a blizzard, we offered them heat, a roof for their heads, dry shoes for their feet. We wined them and dined them, they ate all our meat, and they slept in the house of MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave O'Donnell, and cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonald. They came from Fort William, we murder in mind. The Campbell had orders, King William had signed. They taught to the sword these words underlined, and leave none alive called MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave O'Donnell, and cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonald. They came in the night when the men were asleep, this band o' Argyles through snow soft and deep, like murdering foxes among helpless sheep, they slaughtered the house of MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave of O'Donnell. And cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonald. Some died in their beds at the hand of the foe. Some fled in the night, were lost in the snow. Some lived to accuse him, was struck the first blow. But gone was the house of MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave of O'Donnell. And cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonald. Oh, cruel is the snow that sweeps Glencoe and covers the grave of O'Donnell. And cruel was the foe that raped Glencoe and murdered the house of MacDonald.
This is Simply Scottish. On this episode, we're featuring finalists from our Moment in Scottish History contest. Our last two moments on this episode usher us into the modern era of Scotland's history. Marian Webster of Edinburgh writes the first. "You are to secure all the avenues that no man escape," he read, "expecting you will not fail." So it was to begin at 5, well before anyone would be up and about in the icy fastness of a February Glencoe morning. He shivered, feeling the full weight of the sentence which led all the way back to a king. After the Glorious Revolution and the Jacobite uprising of 1689, a treacherous incident took place in the Scottish Highlands. It began when William of Orange accepted an invitation to take the throne of England in 1688, with James exiled in France. In August 1691, William offered the Highland clans a pardon for their part in the Jacobite uprisings in exchange for their loyalty. Permission to give this oath of loyalty finally reached Scotland in mid-December from James, only weeks before the king's deadline. A few clan chiefs managed to comply quickly, but others, including Alexander MacDonald of Glencoe, didn't. And although he took the oath, he did so some days after the deadline. This was enough for certain men, including Secretary of State John Dalrymple, Master of Stair, who was delighted at the chance to make an example out of one of the Highland clans. After plotting with John Campbell, 1st Earl of Breadalbane, and his cousin Archibald Campbell, the 10th Earl of Argyll, Dalrymple convinced the king in London to sign an order to root out a den of thieves in the valley of Glencoe. A company of men from the Earl of Argyll's regiment, under the command of Captain Robert Campbell of Glenlyon, were sent to the MacDonalds of Glencoe, who received them in typical Highland fashion. They were there to collect the Scottish Parliament's cess tax, or so the MacDonalds thought. For 12 days the soldiers lived with their hosts in peace, neither side aware of what was to come. Orders trickled down from superiors, and the massacre commenced early in the morning of February 13th, 1692. In all, 38 men were murdered in their homes or while trying to escape. Another 40 women and children died of exposure after their homes were burned. Although the Scottish Parliament sought punishment for those responsible, no one was ever brought to trial. The tragedy passed swiftly into memory, and even legend, but was never forgotten. Less than 20 years after the Glencoe massacre, the kingdoms of Scotland and England formally united as Great Britain. A number of events led up to the eventual Treaty of Union. With the Union of the Crowns in 1603, James VI of Scotland and I of England sought to rule over a united kingdom. In the aftermath of civil war in England and the struggles of the Covenanters in Scotland, Oliver Cromwell attempted to create a godly Britannic union between Scotland, England, and Ireland. Although this was abolished with the restoration of King Charles II, discussion and debate over union continued in both countries. Queen Anne, who took the throne in 1702, sealed the deal when she arranged for both parliaments to enter into fresh negotiations for a union treaty in 1705. Although extremely unpopular with much of the citizenry and a number of politicians, union was finally secured. Our last finalist entry on this episode was submitted by Nicola Cowmeadow in Perth. Lady Catherine stormed from Blair, her cries ringing in the hall, servants gaping. Running up the hill, she fought to regain control, Athol's letter in her hand. Reading it, disbelieving, protesting to the mountains and God. "I cannot bring myself to believe, as you do, that the union is like to carry, on such monstrous ill terms, to church and state." These were the written words of Catherine Murray, first Duchess of Athol, in 1706. She was firmly opposed to the Union of 1707, her opposition based on her faith, and that she believed God would deliver the nation. Women were formally excluded from politics, but as a noble wife, she was highly politicized and supported her husband John Murray, the first Duke of Athol, and her brother James Hamilton, fourth Duke of Hamilton, in their opposition to Union. She was often alone at Blair Castle, and had the entire management of the estate and her family to organize. Her marriage was a happy one, and she was an important confidant and advisor to her husband. Many people believe he was bribed to stay away from the final ratification of the union in 1707. In fact, Lady Catherine died suddenly in January of that year, and he was devastated at her death and unable to return quickly to public life. In an era where women had been thought subordinate to men, Lady Catherine's moment in history reveals a strong woman with determined views and an unswerving faith in God. More moments illuminating Scotland's history are featured in part two of this series. My thanks goes out to everyone who entered the contest. I was extremely pleased with the participation and the quality of the entries. That's it for this episode of Simply Scottish. Share your comments on this show and listen to others at simplyscottish.com. And if you enjoyed the music on the episode, enter our monthly music giveaway for a chance to win a free Scottish album of your choice, sponsored by musicscotland.com. Enter online at www.simplyscottish.com. We'll close with music from Sandy Meldrum and a piece called Scottish Piano Fusion. I'm Andrew McDermott. Let's connect soon so we can celebrate more of all things Scottish.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright 2013, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.